RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Last week here at RCR, we were talking with Carolyn Young of Retail NZ about the situation for, well, mainly Wellington's Golden Mile, but more generally, I guess, retail in Wellington and how many people think it's dying. And I've only recently moved from Wellington and I do still have visions of going down Lambton Quay and other areas and seeing many vacant shops. On RCR, at least a couple of times in the last year or so, we've had Barry Wilson on, Guardians of the Golden Mile and SOS Courtney Place. And we thought we'd have Barry back on to get his thoughts on the current state of Wellington retail and the general condition of the city, more specifically Courtney Place, because that's his hood. Barry, good to have you back.
Thanks for having me, putting up with me again. Well done.
That's all right. Okay, so just to inform you, in case you didn't hear our chat with Carolyn Young, she seemed to think if retailers could hang on to Christmas, there was some hope, but maybe some aren't so sure. So is that the issue, holding on until a sales bump, or is it way more systemic than that, Barry?
I think there's a cliche, survive till 25, that's a long way
to
go.
Yeah, she said that.
There are definitely green sprouts out there. I mean, just one story has popped out this week, and, you know, the Gubb family, Gubb Shoes, are a legendary store for children's ballet shoes and sporting shoes and little girls' schooling and whatever shoes. They moved out of what was near the Golden Mile. See, the Golden Mile is not just the road itself. It's the contributors to it. And they were in Wakefield Street. Well, that copped the horrendous works necessary for the town hall. And their trade just dwindled away. And so they pulled out, and it was a sad day because they were iconic Wellington retailers. And, you know, the Gubbs know a lot about retail and a lot about the history of this town. Well, they've moved to Kandala, which has got a good little hood going well, gangbusters. And they're delighted. So there are green sprouts like that. But as far as the actual Golden Mile itself is concerned, yes, it is pretty grim in parts, especially Courtney Place, where, you know, one in every three shops almost closed and the bars are failing. And there's a lot of reasons for this. It's an imperfect storm of the first order. A lot of it caused by council, a lot of it caused by over-policing, a lot of it caused by lots of things, attitudes. And then the hysteria of the media set in. And it becomes a sort of a whipping horse, and so people don't come because they have the wrong perception altogether. It's not as bad as that.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about some of who you've just mentioned, the council. And you mentioned the town hall. I mean, I'm no expert. Does it really need all that work?
Well, it does, because once you press the button to say go, you're then stuck with the outcome. It was an uncertain project. We've learned a huge lesson, which I don't blame the council for this. It's an iconic old thing, but we didn't need it, really. We could have bought a new one for much less, and we could have kept facades, possibly. That's all in the rear vision mirror. That's all hindsight. We committed to it. We found the ground was unstable beneath it in parts, and so, you know, it's blown out horrendously. It really is horrendous what that has cost, and that's emptied the coffers of the council to a large degree.
Yeah, well, that sounds like bad decision-making to me. Who are these people, Barry, making such clumsy decisions on taxpayers' money? Ratepayers' money.
Yeah, I don't know too much about it was the ground stability issues, which is this is reclaimed land, so they must have looked at it with a fine-tooth comb. I simply don't know. But what I do know is once you start a project like that, you've got to run with it. You can't just stop halfway through and have some cost and then pull it down. That wouldn't work either.
I guess why I'm thinking about this is I was there for the 7.8 Kaikoura earthquake, so I know what a big earthquake feels like, and that was a big earthquake. And one thing that I did seem to notice along with other people is most of virtually 100% of the older buildings withstood that quite nicely. And I think it was the defence headquarters just off Molesworth Street and a new building, on reclaimed land down on the wharf, I think the BNZ building.
That
copped it. So, you know, you can be you can wrap everybody in cotton wool, you can plan for the 1 in 1,000 year event, etc. But, you know, in the end, we take our chances within reason, don't we?
Yeah, you're correct. There is an element of hysteria. They kept enforcing a stronger, stricter code, and learning lessons from overseas, I guess, as well. But I think it's been overdone big time. I think it's been a gravy train for consultants.
Right.
And I think it's become just it's a form of hysteria. But the whole of Cuba Street is almost stickered. Little old concrete buildings and cracks in them or whatever. So, you know, it's everywhere. If another big shake came, and a super one like the Napier earthquake or something like that, or the 1855 one, I think, here, raised the airport out of the water.
Yeah.
That would be horrendous, and we'd have a huge loss of life. So, you know, I just can't get my head around, though, at what stage to say, look, enough's enough, we've got to live with this and accept the geological reality of the place and just get on with life and stop throwing buckets of money down holes.
Yeah. Okay. So the Golden Mile plan, we already know of a couple of retailers who've had to pack up and go just because of the unknown workflow delays that could be part of that. Mm. Also, the obsession, and I saw it every day from where I lived, with pushing these cycleways through. I'm thinking specifically of Kent Terrace and the constriction of traffic that was so obvious, the delays down that stretch so much more than they ever were, and the money, we're back to money spent on them. I think, you know, the horrendous per meter fee for this.
It's obscene. I'm actually downtown now, looking out the window at the Queen Victoria statue on between Kent and Cambridge. Now, this road was reduced from 3 lanes to 2, and the bus lane put in as well. So the cars are constricted. The unintended consequences, which is plain as the nose on anyone's face, was that this would constrict traffic and cause delay. A friend of mine's wife from Moreton Bay took her one day from St. Mark's School 30 minutes to get from the Basin Reserve to Moreton Bay.
Yeah.
The cars are choked. Now, this also works the other way. They outside the fire station, they've put in cycle lanes across the fire engines.
Yeah.
They're all fire engines, bless the cotton socks. And it's just ludicrous. So what they've done is they've buggered up the traffic flow, caused huge emission increase by the delays and the distance travelled of ordinary people in ordinary cars going about their ordinary day's life. It's nuts. But going back to the Golden Mile itself, that whole project is sick as a puppy. It's just a nuts thing. We always said it was. What's wrong with it, Paul, mainly, is that was designed to save, to reduce emissions. Well, it doesn't, because the first thing that cars excluded, bear in mind, this is cars and trucks, not allowed 24-7 between the Embassy Theatre and the Cenotaph. That's a huge bit of road. I think it's 3.2 kilometres.
Right.
No cars. What do those cars do? They go to Queensgate or go Upper Hutt or go to Porirua. They go somewhere else. They drive further and for longer. Emissions increase massively. And the cars do not go to Crusher Collins' wonderful car heaven. They just go and blast more fumes around the place. So that's a silly thing. Then they say, oh, it's going to speed buses up by 2 minutes. Well, if you're worried about 2 minutes, you've got a real problem in your head. But that's not true either, because the biggest delay for the buses is getting on with the snapper guard and getting off. That's where the delay occurs. And little old ladies and tourists asking for directions. All these things hold up buses. Next thing, they say, oh, we're going to weigh this resilience. Well, there's only 5 ways across Wellington City and Bentley, and one of them is the Golden Mile. So you're taking out 20% of your route. This is opposed by, politely though, not as ardently as I would prefer, by the fire service, the ambulance service. I have an ex-client in my former life as a lawyer, Titan Cranes. That magnificent company going back.
Yeah,
a long
time. Deceive you. Yeah.
Well, I rang them the other day, and I just caught up with the family because the mum was not so well, and they're just beloved clients you keep for life in your mind. Well, we talked about this, and he said, look, we come to town with a big crane, and we service air conditioning units 15 stories up. How can we do that? How can we drive the crane through town or to lift big slabs of concrete off people through the clutter of the Golden Mile, trees and plants and, you know, boxes and God knows what? And the buses are cut down to 2 lanes head-to-head, 3 feet apart. It's just nuts, Paul. Yeah, yeah. The Golden Mile is a nut scheme of nutheads.
Yeah, and it disregards the normal patterns of human behaviour. Number one, emissions. There's no settled science on that. You could say, you could make an argument for, you're making that up. So if you're making that up and inflicting all this on people's everyday lives and livelihoods, then it is nuts, surely.
It is nuts. Look, I have concerns about emissions, but I know that several things are happening. And the green, we call them the grey-green grims. These grim people, they don't smile.
No.
The greens are just strangers to the truth. They mix poppycock up. Look, cars are changing massively. They're going completely the non-emission way anyway, regardless of whether that's big for climate change. I think it is, personally. But it's under control. It's coming down, down, down. The cars are getting smaller. New engines, I mean, the days of the ICE car, see, Jaguar is stopping making internal combustion engines altogether. Other cars are too. So, and you've got these new engines, hydrogen coming up.
Yeah, hydrogen.
New ammonia.
That's a big deal.
So new fuels.
Yeah.
But what on earth are they talking about? See, science always, look at World War II. We went from biplanes to jet planes in 6 years. I mean, when there's an urgent need, urgent, brainy people do urgent, brainy things.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems to be an ideological position more than anything. And
It is. And they're actually thick.
But there's also a feeling that there's a certain satisfaction taken by these people to impose an ideology forcefully on other people.
The Greens are nothing other than brown shirts, in my view, and that's not referring to the Nazis, just a brown shirt mentality that we know better and you'll do as we say. A bunch of bunkum. When you meet with them, you knock on the door and there's no one there. The lift doesn't go to the top floor. These are seriously deranged. I mean, Julian Jenner, in my mind, who assaulted my friend Nick Cranfield, who closed the store and tried to reason with it. Yeah, well, we're just absurd. But she is a fruitcake, a fruit loop. And she is just chanting out a mantra, which is not true, false, and knowingly false. Now, we say the Greens tell lies. What is a lie? Well, I've got a friend, a good friend, who's a top barrister. And he said, Barry, a lie is when the utterer knows it's false and still says it.
Yeah.
And that's what the Greens do. They're stuck in the dark ages. I mean, it's scatterbrained people. And I try to reason with them. I've given up now. It's a hopeless case. They do not have a clue what they're talking about.
Okay. So the council, they've spent $180 million on a convention centre, which anyone can see is probably never going to wash its face. I hope I'm wrong. And I'm using that as an example of how profligate the spending is. That's huge money for ratepayers. When I left Wellington, over the road, there were two major leaking pipes. And I noticed that about a week after I went, a huge water main went and flooded the whole area out. This never used to happen in my memory anyway, unless I was missing something. There seems to be a complete misunderstanding in the council leadership. I don't know if it's the elected officials or the officials behind the scenes of not.
It's the officials.
Okay. Well,
it's the officials. And look, basically, the council is run by three people on the council. That's the left green block of youngsters who, frankly, are wet behind the ears. We have Laurie Foon, Deputy Mayor. Well, she went broke in a frog shop, which was very good. My wife used to go there, my ex-wife. And it's top shelf. But she says, I regret we couldn't take retailers with us. Well, she was a retailer and went flop and lost a bundle of money probably. But she was a really good retailer. She couldn't survive. And then she's an ethnically interesting person with Chinese roots as well. She doesn't feel empathetic with the Asian culture of Courtney Place. We have 22 ethnicities down there.
Yeah.
Neighbours can't speak to each other because they have different languages. English is a third or fourth language. I mean, this is the reality of Courtney Place that I know and I've engaged with. And I really enjoy those people, and they're so diverse and interesting. They're all law-abiding, pretty much tax-paying. I mean, this is a good hood of good people being sullied and assaulted by people who just chant the mantra from sort of wet out of university.
I remember back in the day, because there used to be in the nightclub scene in the 80s, through the 80s, and bars and hospitality were distributed all over the city back in the day.
Yep.
It's been concentrated into Courtney Place, and I guess there was some thinking behind that. But it seems to me that the nightlife of Wellington compared to those days, and remember it was a lot more restricted then on alcohol availability, licensing and all of that. It's nowhere near what it used to be, the vibrancy, the excitement, and the distributed nature of that nightlife, which made it interesting in of itself, has been vanillaized. And how's that doing, Barry? How's the nightlife doing in Courtenay Place?
Oh, it's a struggle street, definitely. I mean, there's lots of reasons for it, but just to go through it from the past, I mean, there were some significant restaurants even on down the quay, the Beefeater Arms and all that sort of stuff. Well, go on. There are very few bars and restaurants, or not, there are restaurants open, but very few in the CBD itself. Then you go up to Cuba Street, which has a whole culture, which is just wonderful. And sadly, the mayor says things like, oh, she'd like to capture the Cuba vibe on the Golden Mile. Well, it's not. We don't want that. We don't want another Cuba Street. It won't work, you know. But that is a dining joint. It's fantastic. There's some wonderful restaurants up there. I just give a rap for someone. Well, I shouldn't really, but there's a place called The Ram, which is fantastic. There's many fantastic restaurants up there.
Yeah.
And that is good. That street is also tatty and tired. It needs a lot of help, but it gets away with it because it's bohemian. The quay itself has very few restaurants, and you've got some other great bars around, and they all close at night time. Then you go into Courtenay Place itself. Well, you know, the Hummingbird's coming back, hopefully. Nick Mills has got hold of that, and he's done it, run it for years, and it's been brilliant, but it just got pretty tough, and he was, I think, picked on quite unfairly by the authorities, the licensing people. I mean, when the policeman comes out and says, oh, one drunk and one bar is one too many, that's just absolute nonsense the whole world over. And Port Ackards are very good, I think, by comparison to overseas. I'm not a huge fan of 4 a.m. closing at all. It's a bit too late for me, but not that I go there.
Yeah.
But I think that's, even though it's a lucrative time for them, which is only two nights a week, really, I think we have to think at some things and concede some things. But the problem down here has been, a landlord problem. Courtenay Place has been woefully neglected. One building I know about, the Paramount, and I know the owner, that pays $5,000 a week approximately in rates. $5,000 a week in rates. That's sucked out of the tenants there. Carl, who stood for council, is a lovely guy, got cafe ice, a wonderful cafe. I go there every day. Well, I mean, he's part of that building and paying stupendous rates. What for? For a street that's going to be buggered up? To me, there's a reciprocity and a sort of a fair play thing that when you pay huge rates, you should more or less have the same street outside you, not cars removed and car parks removed. I mean, kids go there after school for an ice cream, and tradies go in the morning for a coffee, and the bakery survives on tradies and cops calling in, you know, between shifts in the morning, starting at 7.
Yeah. So, okay. Do you feel like you are? I think you said before we're going to win. That might have been in just the little chat we had before we started the interview. Yep. But okay, what is winning, Barry? What's winning?
We believe we will be proven right and correct. There's one thing I'm going to mention to you, which is very alarming, because I've been on this job for 6 years full time. You know, it's 4 or 5 hours a day, and it's not an obsession, but it's a course de livre.
Yeah,
and it's a passion. The mayor describes the Golden Mile as her passion project. Well, defeating it is my passion project, because I have a retail background. My mum worked at Kirk's. My dad was a baker. I know about how hard it is to work in small business, and the respect they are due and the hours they work. They come home and sit at the kitchen table and do their tax returns or their banking, all that stuff. It's just what you see in the shop is just only part of the surface. Yeah. It's really a tough business. So I'm just thinking that we'll defeat them because they're wrong. And the whole thing is a hoax. It's based on falsehoods. Complete falsehoods. Let's get Wellington moving. We're actually a bunch of liars. I can prove that. But what's happened now, this is the frightening thing we've just learned earlier this year. In July last year, a Waka Kotahi board minute went up to the board, whereby they approved the Golden Mile at a cost of $139 million. That's $65,000 per metre, all the way from the embassy to Parliament. That's an absurd amount of money to spend the street that exists and is there and needs polishing up. It doesn't need transformation. It needs refurbishment. It needs cuddling. It needs polishing. That's all. Now, this report from a guy called Brett Gidden and a lady called Robin Nelson, senior consultants in Waka Kotahi, said in the report to their board, which are a bunch of people from all walks of life and some skilled and some not, but, you know, they're the board, they just have a rubber stamp, really. They were recommended to approve the spend, which they did, before the Labor government was thrown up the board, showing it all big time, and was thinking too, all this wishy-washy thinking. And that report said that the Golden Mile had the support of retailers. Well, I was involved in the payment and the and I was the one who procured the courier poll.
Right.
And which said that 68% of general public didn't want the Golden Mile. Our own polling and our own petition showed us that 98% of retailers on the Golden Mile do not want the Golden Mile.
Yeah.
So there's huge numbers against Mr. Public Servant who has been to school 101 and, you know, gee whiz, we got to have mode shift and ride bikes and get the bus, you know. And El Dorado will break out. Well, this is not the yellow brick road. This is our street and our city where we live in our way. Quite different. Don't give us any comparisons of Amsterdam or bloody, even Monte Carlo's been thrown in the mix. I
mean, what?
Vancouver. The mix of comparisons. They have the most absurd comparisons. I mean, these people are high on something. It won't be drugs, but it's something similar. So they're nuts. Now, that board report was a lie. That board report procured the board to invest in the Golden Mile. The new government came and said, stop the Golden Mile, stop, let's get money moving, which they did. It was then passed to the council, but unfortunately, Chris Bishop didn't have a full grasp when he was way too busy with huge workload. They said they can't undo the Waikato decision to spend this $140 million, especially the $30 million that had been approved for the Courtenay Place. Well, when you make a dumb decision or you stumble across one, the first thing you do is say, whoa, rein in the horses, let's pull back, you know. Incredibly, this government let that happen, that they still are spending the $30 million and they're rushing to sign the contract as we speak, you know, to try and force this thing on the city. Now, the lady who runs it, Siobhan Proctor, is quite a stroppy lady, but I'm not going to bag her. But I think she's a checkered history with Let's Get Wellington Moving before coming into the council, and she's a very strong-headed, strong-willed person. We had Andrew Boddy, who walked the plank for sexist comments against Nicola Cranfield. It's a very checkered history, what's what I'm saying, and the wrong people, I won't say clowns at the controls, but the wrong people have been at the controls of this process all the way through, and they've resorted to telling lies. And it's a lie that got Wakatai to approve this appalling assault. We call it a ram raid on our hero retailers. We just spent $30 million to slam dunk Courtenay Place. You'd have to be barking mad, wouldn't you?
Yeah, well, as a Wellingtonian, born and bred and spending multiple decades over a good spread of time in and out of the city along the way, is I want them all fired, Barry. How do we do that?
I think they're firing themselves. I mean, you've got the CEO who we think is headstrong also and has a history in New Plymouth and brought down the city planner with her, and they're just running, they're dancing to the beat of a different drum. These are just not Wellingtonians. They don't get it. They might be highly paid and think they're, you know, terribly important and terribly clever, but they're not. They're actually Luddites in our city, running things in a way that we don't want and don't belong here. So you're having an officer exodus. They're falling out of bed one after another.
Right.
The crew we are dealing with now, a nice appeal, they're very benign. I'm dealing with a couple I wouldn't want to put the boot in any way. They're nice people, but they're completely out of their depth.
Yeah, I don't. Who cares about nice, right? It's what works and what doesn't. And if you can't make it work, see you later. Goodbye. And also, where's the money gone? How are you going to refund that? How are you going to offset the terrible rates rises through your bungling?
Well, that's true. Look, the thing is, you know, I learned in quite a long career, and it was confrontational at times, that, you know, throwing petals and tiddlywinks doesn't work. You've got to throw rocks.
Yeah.
And we did that. And we've been called, well, I've enjoyed being called, just motivates me things, but bad actors by some hapless, wet behind ears journalist. We called, the mayor calls us like outdated and anti-progress.
Dinosaurs.
They use words about themselves. The mayor's not progressive. She wouldn't have a progressive bone in the body. She wouldn't have a clue what progressive means. It's just a cliche clapped around people who are in love with themselves. They call themselves all sorts of words, you know, and they make out that we're some sort of backward gang. We're not. We are forward-thinking people with vast experience, and in a room, and they won't meet us in a room, of any numbers. We wipe the floor with them every time, and we don't mean to be. We have some members who get very heated, and it's hard to control at times. I try and keep a cap, and I don't raise my voice or swear or anything, but people do, and that's because their job's on the line. I mean, most businesses in Courtney Place, the setup cost of most of them, even the smaller ones, is $300,000 to a million. I could think of two galleries down in Courtney Place, Aura and Kura, with both brilliant galleries, Māori and New Zealand art and whatever, and furnishings. Their stock's worth, each of them, over $1 million. And that's the money on the line. And they supply goods from all over New Zealand, made by clever people in a wonderful way. Look, every restaurant, we've lost Mary from Astana. It's got a new owner, but she's gone. We lost Taco Queen. We lost our pharmacy. We lost our liquor store. This is all because of the Golden Mile, you know, the black cloud hanging over Courtney Place.
All right. So that's Barry Wilson updating us on the campaign to save the Golden Mile in Courtney Place. Thank you, Barry. Won't be the last. We'll have another chat sometime as this thing kind of moves through. We'll get another update, but stay calm and carry on, as they say.
Yeah, keep calm and carry on. But hey, listen, thanks for your good work, Birds. We have no voice. Mainstream media ignore us deliberately and totally. So I've got a few facts out today which should rock the boat. They probably won't, because people just don't have a very small attention span. What I'm saying in its essence today is the Golden Mile is a fraud, a hoax.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.